Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
We've been looking at the ghost of liberalism present. As you may recall, some time back, we looked at the ghost of liberalism past, and ultimately we will look at the ghost of liberalism future. Along the lines of the Charles Dickens novel, written many years ago, of The Ghost of the Christmases. Anyway, we've been keying in on the so-called progressive Christianity and some of its key leaders, and actually looking at the misinterpretations of Matthew chapter 25 by the social justice, social gospel movement, and the havoc that it's been wreaking, both in the church and outside the church, really, upon our country and other more civilized type countries in the world. Now, I shared with you an article, and I strongly recommend it, called Leftist Social Justice Warriors in Matthew 25 on the Study, Grow, and Know website. And as you may recall in the article, among other things, he was showing how social justice, social gospel warriors, whatever you want to call them, twist the scriptures in Matthew 25 and try to, you know, along with the incorrect interpretation of Matthew 25, they use as a go-to argument that Jesus was a refugee and then assert that compassion should overrule law to allow all unvetted individuals into the USA. Unfortunately, this is not in keeping with any nation's sovereign borders, and it goes on, and the article is very good, and but I want to continue to add to that, since this is obviously a very big issue, and I mentioned a Christianity Today article that I wanted to refer to, and I will today. And by the way, I hope in the future, sometime in the future, I plan on doing a podcast on many of the so-called Christian magazines that are out there, or at least, you know, the few that are out there that seem to calling upon themselves to represent Christianity and show the serious flaws. And anyway, magazines like I Believe, Christianity Today, and Sojourners, Relevant. These are three magazines that, and Charisma, of course, I don't want to leave that out. But these are some of the more popular, well-known, so-called Christian magazines. I'll be looking at that on down the road. But for now, there's an article in Christianity Today. And as I say, I don't give Christianity Today that much credibility. Once upon a time, I think it was a good Christian magazine. But anyway, their article is entitled, Why Tim Keller, Max Lucado, and Hundreds of Evangelical Christian Leaders Oppose Trump's Refugee Ban. And last week I mentioned this is another reason why I like to be known as a fundamentalist, not an evangelical, as that term, even as the term conservative and liberal Christian seems to be one that is pretty confusing in the days that we're living in these last days, in this deception in the last day we see taking place. Now, the article says, more than 500 conservative, and I have a question mark behind that word, evangelical pastors and leaders representing all 50 states are urging President Donald Trump to reverse his temporary ban on refugee resettlement and his dramatic reduction of the total America will accept this fiscal year. The open letter, published Wednesday as a full-page ad in the Washington Post, with more than, that's a nice conservative magazine, but anyway, with more than 100 of the signatories listed, was notable for two reasons. First, it contained only conservative evangelicals instead of the mix of progressive names that usually sign such open letters. And second, topping the list were Tim Keller and Max Lucado, two well-known and well-respected pastors and authors who rarely speak out on political matters. Let me just take a little digression there and say this. For whatever good these gentlemen may have done, and I don't question that they may have done some good, I don't want to seem arrogant about stating this in this manner, but there has certainly been some concerns, and I want to key in on Tim Keller particularly, about Tim Keller and his ministry. And There's a nice, in a nutshell, there's several articles you can read at a site called Apprising Ministries, APPRISING. Of course, I'm just going to give you the titles, and then you can do your own homework if you're interested. But the articles about Tim Keller, there, one article by Ken Silva, who's with the Lord now, is New Calvinist Tim Keller on Theistic Evolution in the Roman Catholic Church. J.I. Packer, here's another one, and Tim Keller. Wait a second, scrolled up a little too quick. Endorsing the Alpha Course. And of course, you may not know what the Alpha Course is. I won't go into details now. You can check these things out for yourself. The Alpha Course is not a good thing, by the way, in my opinion. Interview with a former member of Tim Keller's church. Another article, John MacArthur on Roman Catholicism, Tim Keller's mysticism, and Mark Driscoll's pornographic divinations. Tim Keller reading Roman Catholic and Quaker mysticism to his RPC leaders. Dr. Gary Gillie, who I really like Dr. Gillie's articles and books and reviews. He reviews Tim Keller's book, The Prodigal God, Recovering the Heart of the Christian Faith. Tim Keller, another article, doesn't believe in a 6 24-hour days of creation or young earth. Another one, Tim Keller recommended Peter Scazzaro spreading spurious centering prayer. Centering prayer is another term for contemplative prayer, contemplative spirituality, Catholic mysticism, if you will. And another one, Gospel Coalition Council member Tim Keller and contemplative prayer. Another is Tim Keller emerging as contemplative proponent. So there's a bunch of articles, and for what it's worth, the titles should cause you to want to check into Mr. Keller a little bit further and find out just how much credibility you want to give to him. Christianity Today seems to be, just raving about Mr. Keller and the fact that he's kind of leading the charge here of those opposing Trump's refugee ban. One other word I'll just say quickly about Tim Keller. It is through Tim Keller's ministry that Kirsten Powers, a former, or she may still be a writer for the USA Today magazine, a very left-wing newspaper, not a magazine, a newspaper, forgive me. Kirsten Powers was formerly an atheist who claimed to become a Christian through Tim Keller's ministry, and at one point in time was a Fox, journalist, whatever you want to call it, with that network for a short period of time. Then she talked about the fact that she was converting to Roman Catholicism. Now, this may have taken place after she gave her position on same-sex marriage, which she supports, by the way. So I wouldn't say she's probably real conservative Christian. Can't blame Tim Keller maybe for all the stuff that the direction that she's going, and she needs prayer just as he does, as we all do. But Kirsten Powers now has landed on CNN, the famous fake news network. So there's a connection there that I wouldn't be real proud of if I was Tim Keller, or vice versa. Maybe Kirsten Powers shouldn't be so proud of her connection with him, but. But anyway, I digress. This article in Christianity Today, we'll read on here. It says other key signatories, those who signed this letter, of course, include Kathy Keller, who I assume is his wife, Tim Keller, I assume. Willow Creek's Bill and Lynn Hybels. There again, I would really question the cataloging, classifying them as conservatives. I would say that they're much more in the liberal vein. But anyway, and I'm not naming every name here. Anne Voskamp, who is another contemplative spirituality individual, contemplative prayer. Southern Baptist Seminary President Daniel Aiken, who I'm not familiar with, but I don't know if he's replaced. There was one of the leaders in the Southern Baptist Church had recently gone up to IHOP, the apostolic movement, the false prophetic movement in Kansas City, and was a keynote speaker there. And I go to a Southern Baptist church, by the way, so it's a good one. And unfortunately, though, some of the Southern Baptist leadership has not been has recently left a lot to be desired. Let's put it that way. Then there is the organizer of the group letter, World Relief, the humanitarian arm of the National Association of Evangelicals, and one of the nine agencies that resettle refugees in America, explained on a conference call Thursday morning that the signatories have grown to more than 3,000. Okay. Now, the reason I mentioned the NAE is because of the leader or former leader. I'm not sure if he's still the leader, Leif Anderson, who was formerly the pastor of Doug Kimball, one of the leading emerging church, you know, which is a far left, what I would say a fake Christian group. Now here's Leif Anderson. He's the head of the National Evangelical Association of Evangelicals, has been for some time, and as I say, I assume he still is. The article probably confirms that, but we're not going to read the whole article. Okay, most evangelical leaders oppose the executive order's impact on refugees. While a small group of conservative evangelical leaders, including Samaritan Purse's Franklin Graham, National Religious Broadcaster's Jerry Johnson, and the American Center for Law and Justice's Jay Sekulow, have spoken out in defense of Trump's plan, the open letter in the Post further cemented the growing consensus among evangelical experts that Trump's executive order on refugees is unnecessary and harmful. How about this? The letter was also signed by Fuller Seminary's Richard Mao. Wow, they don't get much better than Richard Mao. Richard Mao, when he was the president of Fuller Seminary, there was hardly a heresy that he saw that he didn't like. And you know, you can check that out for yourself. That's another whole study. And the direction that Fuller Seminary has gone into apostasy is staggering, from once being a good solid seminary to what it is now. And Richard Mao had a lot to do with that. I mean, before Richard Mao, they questioned the inerrancy of Scripture, and that's where they begin that slide that's brought them to the terrible condition they're in now. So anyway, they're quoting, or they're telling about how Richard Mao signed it. So, like I say, boy, that'd really be a feather in your cap, wouldn't it? Not for me, it wouldn't. And to think of him as a conservative again is more than a stretch. I think it's a misrepresentation. Anyway, let's read a little more here. World Vision. Okay, it joins a previous noteworthy statement by leaders from World Vision. Well, I don't know if you recall, but I remember a little thing about World Vision, that they were having no problem with same-sex marriages and actually were hiring and were just happy and keen on hiring same-sex partners to join in with their solid conservative Christian view there at World Vision. Well, they changed their position on that, and I hate to be cynical, but I suspect it had something to do with donations and financial support. Maybe they weren't quite ready for all the so-called conservative turned liberal type people. Maybe they thought there was a lot more people out there who claimed to be Christian, who claimed to be conservative, who wouldn't have had a problem with it. I don't know for sure, but that's kind of another interesting comment. And when you read an article like this, and those kind of things kind of just jump right out at me, and I say, how exactly are these folks considered conservative? I mean, if they wanted to say a bunch of liberal Christians have decided blah, 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 great, you know. Anyway, this is a very troubling situation. But, you know, as I say, Christianity Today has also been tanking, going down the toilet, so to speak, for quite some time. But I wanted to bring your attention to that article and also a book I found recently that kind of shows the same type of thing, as far as I'm concerned. So many of the so-called Christian or conservative Christians actually, I think, are oftentimes, and this Christianity Today article to me confirms that they're really strange bedfellows. That if they are calling themselves conservatives, and that's questionable in some of their cases, but even if they really are, I think they're compromising and they're going to bed with liberals. They are strange bedfellows. And that's part of the deception in the last days. There's so many things going on, of course, that we could talk about. And we will, hopefully, if the Lord tarries. Or as long as the Lord tarries, I'm going to keep talking. I'll put it that way. Anyway, here's an example from a book called The Mother and Child Project, which was compiled by Hope Through Healing Hands, and with a foreword by Kay Warren, and a preface by Melinda Gates. Now, Kay Warren, of course, is Rick Warren's wife. Once again, folks that I wouldn't particularly call conservative any more than the Willow Creek Bill Hybels and his wife would be considered conservative. I would not really consider them conservative based on their past experience, what we know about them. But anyway, and Melinda Gates, I'm pretty confident, is the same Melinda Gates that's married to Bill Gates. Sorry, I'm not being able to confirm that to you right here and right now. I'm running through a lot of information here. But anyway, more importantly than whether it is that Melinda Gates or not, forgive me, it's been a busy week, folks. Anyway, some of the blurbs, some of the promoters of this book, some of the statements that are found on the very first page when you open up the book is President Clinton. Now, I don't want to take the time to quote President Clinton. I've heard enough of President Clinton. Thank you very much. In the past years, Bishop T.D. Jakes has comments about the book. He likes it, and we know Bishop T.D. Jakes, of course, is formerly didn't believe in the Trinity and was a word faith preacher, among other things. Sheryl Crow, now she likes it. She's a Grammy Award-winning singer and songwriter. I wasn't aware that she was a Christian, and I hope that she will be someday, but I'm not sure she is now. And so anyway, we have, and then World Vision, Richard Stearns, he endorses this. Brian McLaren, one of the leaders of the Emergent Church, he likes this book. Lynn Hybels of Willow Creek Community Church. And then on the back, let's just get down to it. Other contributors to this book include Hillary Clinton, Jimmy Carter. I don't think I have to explain who these folks are. Also, I don't have to probably explain to you that these folks aren't really conservative folk. Desmond Tutu. He's a Nobel Peace Prize winning Episcopalian, I believe, who there's probably hardly a doctrine of the Bible that he believes in that I'm aware of. And I'm going to get to him down the road, too, as we continue to look at liberalism, the ghost of liberalism present, for his contributions. Then you have names like Amy Grant, Christian singer, Michael W. Smith, Rachel Held Evans. And if I have time, we'll say a little bit more about her. She's very liberal, very popular, apparently, in some Christian circles. We have Bruce Wilkerson. The prayer of Jabez was his claim to fame. He probably had more Jesus items in a Christian bookstore, you know, concerning the prayer of Jabez. You know, marketing went crazy with that thing. But anyway, Bruce Wilkerson contributed. And then, of course, there's a lot of people here. I'm not even aware of them, so I'm not naming their names. Tony Campolo, one of my all-time favorites, of course, and Jim Wallace, who we've been talking quite a bit about. These are all folks that are coming together to do some good deeds and in the name of Matthew 25 in this mother and child project. And once again, I always say, hey, I'm all for helping people, helping the poor. You know, we have a food pantry at my church I'm involved with, and I thank God it gives us a chance to share the real gospel with people. But what I don't like is the social gospel, which doesn't share anything of the bread of life for people's souls, which is the most important of all, but wants to take care of them and help build some kind of a socialist kingdom down here on earth to help Jesus out. Rachel Held Evans, she's got a chapter called A Mama Knows. Hillary Clinton, helping women isn't just a nice thing to do. Bruce Wilkerson, let's see, we'll skip that one. And I'm just giving you a little flavor. Jimmy Carter, child marriage and dowry deaths. You know, I haven't read these and probably won't waste a whole lot of time with them, but A Promise to Girls from Desmond Tutu. Tony Campolo, Contraceptives in the Developing World. Jim Wallace, The Good Samaritan in the Global Village. That's Jim Wallace, the Christian Marxist. Anyway, this is, to me, what I would call a good example of, you know, a scriptural, unbiblical union. this is strange bedfellows. This is an unequal yoke, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, if some of these folks whose names you may recognize, some of these Christian musicians, etc., if they're truly children of God, I think they err greatly in being yoked, unequally yoked, with so many of these far-left politicians and far-left apostates that we've been discussing now for some time. So troubling, sad but true, as they say. Now, I want to move on and mention, of course, and this is an article I think I read from at some time in the past, and it's called The Five Most Dangerous Wolves Preying on Christians. And, of course, it's there's five, and the number one is, Joel Osteen, who's not so much, I don't know exactly what Joel Osteen is, but he's not noted necessarily for liberalism. But the number two and number three slots of the five, according to this author's, five most dangerous wolves, are the aforementioned Rachel Held Evans, and I've read a little bit about her before. She's become synonymous with straw man attacks on Christianity. Her constant drumbeat of anti-evangelicism is only bested by her continual evangelistic efforts for liberalism, both politically and theologically. She made news recently by encouraging pro-life Christians to vote for Hillary Clinton. And then, of course, Jim Wallis, number three slot. Unlike the other names on this list, Jim Wallis may not be as well known among evangelicals. Wallis is one of the primary leaders in the resurgence of the heretical social gospel movement. He's founder and editor of Sojourners. And so this is something that, if you've been listening to me, you already have heard about and you know about. But I wanted to throw that out there, that a couple of these people that were in this Mother and Child Project, far left, and in the Christianity Today article, you have people who, as I say, being called conservatives, many I would have to question that. So we have some time here, and I have the other article I mentioned last week. It's called What is God's Perspective on Immigration? I'm going to try to get through this, the most pertinent points. It's an excellent article. It's from the Associates for Biblical Research by a man named Rick Lancer, and I'm going to summarize it. With the inauguration of Donald Trump as president of the U.S. just over a week ago, and this is, of course, about a month ago, but political matters are very much on people's minds. It says, although politics is not a subject ABR typically tackles, it seemed that it was pertinent to study this. And so for your consideration, he says, this is an investigation that attempts to discern God's perspective on the subject of immigration. Illegal immigration. It's best to unambiguously define some terms before continuing. What exactly is illegal immigration? At its simplest, it is the movement of people from one area into another, such that this movement violates laws and regulations in place at any given time at the destination. Laws intended to govern such movement and enforced by the political powers holding sway over the area. These laws can change with time depending on who is in power and whether their governing philosophy has a globalist or nationalist flavor. So they are not set in stone. But regardless of whatever policies are in effect, immigration is always the moving of people from an area of certain characteristics to another that is distinctly different. For immigration to be an issue, there have to be borders. To have a national identity means having established boundaries that mark the transition from one political entity's rules and regulations to another's. Such borders can be either imposed by outside sources, witness how the great powers of World War I partitioned up the Middle East into separate nations, with little attention paid to the fact that these borders sometimes artificially lump together disparate people groups. Or they can arise from a recognition that people groups tied together by ethnicity or religion inhabit a certain area rather than another, often constrained by geographic features such as mountains or rivers. But at their root, however, borders recognize points where political power over an area changes from one source to another. With those definitions in mind, let's try to discern what light the Word of God can shed on whether borders, together with the imposition of laws that they entail, are justifiable, and if so, how they impact the status of people who move from one area to another. Borders in the Bible. The early chapters of Genesis tell us about the spread of mankind throughout the world after the flood. At the dawn of civilization, we find the extended clan of Noah's family, perhaps excepting a few adventurous souls, Scripture is silent about, more or less staying together. An indeterminate period of time passed, which could have spanned a couple of hundred years, before the bulk of humanity moved westward into the plain of Shinar. That's in Genesis 11:2. After the migration into Shinar, we see the beginnings of discrete nations. Genesis 10, which provides an overview of how various people groups were derived from patriarchal progenitors, largely follows chronologically the details discussed later in chapter 11, which focuses on how those nations arose in the aftermath of the Tower of Babel incident. At the time of this great division, God expressed his concern, "Behold, they are one people, and they all have the same language, and this, building the city and tower," which apparently concentrated the effects of sin in one place, "is what they began to do, and now nothing which they purpose to do will be impossible for them." Genesis 11:6. To address this problem, the Lord confused their languages, with the result that he scattered them abroad from there over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. The language used in Genesis 10 informs us that the concept of borders to divide one's people territory from another existed from the dawn of civilization. For example, verse 19 is very specific. The territory of the Canaanite extended from Sidon as you go toward Gerar as far as Gaza, as you go toward Sodom and Gomorrah, and Adma and Zebulun as far as Lasha. We also have the Lord specifying the borders of the area which the Israelites were to inhabit in Genesis 15:18-21, and confirmed in detail in Numbers 34:1-12. Despite the fact that other peoples had gone into the land of Canaan first, what mattered was who God wanted to live there, not merely who had first dibs. Some generalities may be drawn from this about the settling of the Americas by Europeans, but that's something for another day, the author says. Anyway, one more thing to note about borders in the Bible is that during the conquest period, the migrating Israelites respected defined borders as they existed at the time. When they came to the territory of the Amorites, they did not simply go tromping into it, but first asked permission to cross. Then Israel, sending messengers to Sihon, king of the Amorites, saying, "Let me pass through your land. We will not turn off into field or vineyard. We will not drink water from wells." In other words, the Israelites thus recognized the reality of national borders at this early point in history and treated them with respect. Although it is not our purpose here to examine in detail what the New Testament has to say on the subject, we should note in passing the New Testament teaching on borders confirms they are ordained by God. In Acts 17:26, the Apostle Paul specifically affirmed, "And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and boundaries of their habitation." I'm going to end there. I'm out of